The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Yes, all eyes on the blue and red map emerging from the United States. Obviously, a lot of Israeli interest, not only anecdotal interest, people who like to follow the news no matter what's on the news, but of course, real interest because of the influence that the U.S. administration has in Israel in so many different ways, bringing peace agreements together. It would be safe to say that without the work done by the U.S. administration, those recent peace agreements with the United Arab Emirates and with Bahrain and with Sudan and budding agreements with other Arab nations certainly wouldn't materialize. Also, a lot of financial and military support from the U.S. And it does make a big difference as to who's in the office. So there is a very, very keen interest from Israel on what the outcome of the election will be.
What does Israel anticipate if there's a Biden win? It's got to be very unnerving for Israel.
Well, I think the way that we view these things is kind of black and white. You know, we know what Trump has done over the years that he's been in office, although there have been some interesting reports written, some opinions written about the fact that people feel that Trump might be leaving the Middle East now, assuming that he was not to win, that he would be leaving the Middle East in a worse situation than what he found it in. I'm not sure that that's entirely true. I think there have certainly been some developments, some positive developments during his time in office. And so we generally kind of look at these things in black and white, saying Trump is good and Biden is bad and there's no in between. But I think that Biden will certainly have an element of a sympathy towards Israel that, you know, we can certainly expect some support from his side. Will it be the same as Trump's? I'm sure it won't be. I'm sure that it'll be different in the event that Biden takes office. But I don't think it's going to be all doom and gloom. I think that there is enough common interest, enough, the interest that America has to ensure Israel's safety and to promote peace in our region and, you know, to give us the military support that we need. I think there's enough interest from any U.S. administration. And I don't think that Biden is going to be an enemy of Israel. I mean, certainly Israel has experienced some difficult U.S. administrations in the past. And, you know, we've come out of that okay. It's not been easy. It's not been what we've wanted, but we've survived and we've come out bigger and stronger than before. So I don't know that Biden is going to be such a terrible thing. But, you know, I guess time will tell.
Absolutely. I just keep thinking of that famous conversation that he had with Menachem Begin, where Begin said, I'm not a Jew. We are not a Jew on trembling knees. It just stays with me. A very worrying reflection of Joe Biden.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And one cannot forget that. However, a few years have passed since then. And people develop and people see things in a different way. And one hopes that Joe Biden's moved on from there. And he will begin to understand the realities of the importance of a relationship with Israel and how important the Israeli democracy in the Middle East is to America's interests here. And even if he might not instinctively, intuitively wish to support Israel or wish to be a supporter of a Jewish country, I think that America's interests will force him to support that to some degree, as we've seen in previous administrations. Let's be honest, Barack Obama wasn't Israel's biggest fan, but he was forced to promote America's interests and therefore in that way had to support Israel to some degree, even if it might have been counterintuitive.
Absolutely. Proposed increases in fines for coronavirus violations have been opposed by the Haredi members of Knesset. Why have the increases been opposed?
Well, I mean, this is a classic situation of being concerned about our own community being singled out, because it has been acknowledged now publicly by the Haredi lawmakers that the biggest violations, particularly when it comes to violations of opening educational institutions against the law have really come from the Haredi community. And instead of them turning around and saying, you know what, this is not okay from our community, because the reason why these restrictions are being placed in the first place are because they are dangerous to human life. We're trying to save people's health. We're trying to save people's lives. And so the fact that our community happens to be the biggest violators is not okay. And we should therefore support big fines in order to encourage them not to violate. But instead, of course, they've come out saying, we recognize that we're the biggest violators. And on that basis, we're going to have to pay out the most money. So let's rather argue to reduce the fines so that at least they won't have to be on the hook for so much money. And in the end, there was a proposal to increase the fine to an educational institution that's open against the regulations set down by the health ministry from the current level of 5,000 shekels to 20,000 shekels. And in the end, the coronavirus cabinet agreed to set the level at 10,000 shekels in the middle, or half the proposed amount that was suggested before, in order to somehow reach an agreement with these ultra-Orthodox members of parliament and their concern about the Haredi community being singled out. I have read some very, very interesting articles about why it is that the Haredi community has been so insistent upon violating these restrictions, and in particular insisting that the educational institutions be opened up. And there is a lot of concern apparently within the ultra-Orthodox community of people leaving their community, people drifting away. There is some reports have suggested that there's an unprecedented crisis in the ultra-Orthodox community as young people drift away. And there is a concern that if those educational institutions that they feel keep people on the straight and narrow and keep them within the community are closed for any period of time, that that may well result in more and more people drifting away from the community in particular. I don't know about from the religion, but certainly from the community. And so they are prepared to take these fines on the knuckles and just keep pushing ahead and doing their own thing in order to somehow keep this disaffected youth within the educational institutions.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed, and in fact a terrible reflection of some of the issues that have gone on in America with that. Before we carry on, I do want to just make sure that I've read some of the messages that that show a different perspective as well. Garen Cohn says of Howard 16, Howard makes a lot of valid points. Joe for president, God help America if Trump gets another term. So it was just important to bring a little bit of balance to that. Let's just talk about Malawi. That was a nice story.
Well, Malawi is a very fascinating story because we had an official visit to Israel by the Malawian foreign minister, Eisenhower Makaka, who was in Israel yesterday. And now Malawi is a country that was created in 1964 and has maintained diplomatic relations with Israel ever since that day, continuously without any breaks at all, right until the current day. Having said that, Malawi has no embassy in Israel. So even though we have official diplomatic relations, there is no official embassy in Israel. And the Malawian foreign minister yesterday said that there is a plan to open an embassy in Israel, not only to open an embassy in Israel, but to actually open it in Jerusalem, which he described as Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the state of Israel, will be a bridge of peace for the whole world. And I call on more countries to follow in Malawi's path and move their embassies to Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Those were the words of the Malawian foreign minister yesterday during a visit to Israel. And, you know, if we just take stock of where things stand with regard to the move of embassies or the establishment of embassies in Jerusalem, it's not been particularly successful, I have to tell you, in spite of a lot of talk and many promises and many indications. Up until this moment, only the United States and Guatemala are the countries that have their embassies in Jerusalem. Now, there are a number of other countries that have said they will be opening one. These include Brazil, Serbia, Kosovo, Croatia, Honduras, Moldova, Romania, Czech Republic, and, of course, now Malawi. But unfortunately, as of now, really nothing doing with regard to moves of embassies to Jerusalem. And in fairness, Over the course of the last 9 to 12 months, it's kind of been low down on the list of priorities. And so obviously we're not expecting any major moves soon, but this whole new improved relationship with Malawi, I think, is really being predicated on agriculture. The flow of technology and know-how in the agricultural area, of course, which for Malawi is a very important part of its economy. And there have been commitments by Israeli companies and the Israeli government to help Malawi to develop further its agriculture, as a result of which it seems as if Malawi will become the first African country to have its embassy in Jerusalem. We look forward to that moment.
Absolutely. This always comes out once a year, and I have to say, I don't know why, but I absolutely love it. And that is that Israel has published its annual list of the most popular babies' names for the last year. What were the top names chosen?
Yeah, this is always a bit of an amusing story. Don't know other countries that do that. Do they do? I think they do, actually. I've seen it in other countries before. In Israel, though, it is particularly interesting because you really see a slant from one community to another in terms of the names that are given to babies, not only in terms of the names that are chosen by Muslims as opposed to Jews as opposed to Christians, but they even do slicing and dicing within these various economic sectors, the lowest socioeconomic sector, what was their most popular name, and so on. But let's just hit the headlines here. Let's start by saying that Muhammad was the most popular name for baby boys in Israel during 2019. Nearly 2,600 boys were named Muhammad, clearly focusing on the Muslim community, that goes without saying. And by the same token, for the Muslim girls, Maryam was the most favored name, 541 girls named Maryam. For Jews, very biblical, and not particularly creative, I have to say. David was the most popular name for Jewish boys in Israel during 2019 for the second year in a row. 1,488 young boys named David or David, as the case may be, followed by Ariel, which was a little bit, just a little behind with 1,341. And also on the biblical side, amongst Jewish girls, the most favored name was Tamar, for the fourth year in a row. So Tamar has really been kind of sweeping the board over the last few years, followed by Maya, which is also one of those names which we've seen relatively eternal. Then there's this list of names that are given to both boys and girls, because it's been quite popular recently to be fairly unisex in naming children. Because when you hear, for example, the name Ariel, you don't know whether it's a boy or whether it's a girl. It could be either. So Ariel was definitely the most popular name given to both sexes, followed by Omer, Noam, Ori, Eliyah, and Hallel, which I found quite interesting. And there are also a few of them amongst the Muslim community, including Nur, Jude, and Malik. Apparently those are unisex names. And also within the Druze community, there are certain favored names, but there are some names that are favored both by the Druze and the Jewish community together. These include Yosef, Adam, and Amir. The most popular names that were shared by Muslim, Druze, and Jews were Lian, Alil, Alin, and more. So those were some of the most popular names. Also, Lavi was very, very common amongst a certain socioeconomic sector. Eitan, also a very, very common name and very popular name amongst the girls. Sarah, again, going back to the biblical links. Noah, Adele. I wonder if the singer Adele had anything to do with that.
Sure. But anyway, I suspect that's a Tel Aviv group name.
Maybe. But one of the things that I find so fascinating about names is when people mention a name, then people immediately try to jump to certain conclusions about how old that person might be.
Absolutely.
Or potentially which country they might have come from. Certain names are very, very much linked to certain age groups and certain in Israel, particularly certain places where people might have emanated from, their families might have come from before living in Israel. And yet David is one of those names that is across all generations. You get, you know, people, David Ben-Gurion, for example.
It's so interesting that you say that.
It goes all the way down.
Yeah, it's very much a timeless name, an ageless name.
All the way down. Absolutely. And even a name like Yosef, which at one stage I think was a little bit kind of being aged, but these days there are quite a number of younger people being named Yosef. It's not a, or Yossi, as people like to sometimes call them. You know, it's also a name that you sometimes think, well, a man of a certain age, but it's not necessarily true. And the same for girls. So yeah, it's just a little bit of lighthearted entertainment that we can really do with at this stage with all the serious things that are happening around us.
Absolutely right, Anthony Wright. Thank you as always. Such an interesting conversation, and it's also important not only to look at the US elections, but look at some of the other things.